What is up, everybody? Thursday, March 25th, Three and Out Podcast. That's this. John Middlecoff, that's me. Appreciate everyone listening. Appreciate everyone that has left a review on Apple or iTunes. We're over 2,000. Keep going. If you haven't done it and you like the show, please go leave a review. If you listen Stitcher, Spotify, other places, I guess you can't leave a review. But if you listen on Apple, iTunes, where little inside the podcast world, the overwhelming majority. Right now, things change. You know, things can change very dramatically. But that's where people listen. So if you could leave a review there, I would greatly appreciate it. Also, the Three and Out Podcast, separate from Collins Feed. Many of you listen through Collins Feed. And I got a DM. Why do you always say subscribe to your podcast? Most people listen to your podcast through your feed, not Collins Feed? And the answer is, I'm not sure. I know we do, well over a million every month. I just don't exactly know where they're coming from. The technology isn't quite good enough to be able to differentiate. So I'm just trying to drive people to my feed, you know? You never know what you don't know. So you just want people there. And it helps with business stuff as well. Some interesting stuff coming up on the pod that we will dive into right now. Okay, I wanted to dive into a story that I found very, very interesting. And it involves Daniel Snyder and the Washington Redskins. And I would say most businesses in our community, right? Like, if you have a good restaurant, people just go there a lot. If you have a store that's not good for whatever reason, whether it's a restaurant and the food's not very good, whether if it's, car dealership that sells crappy cars, word will get out and you will just stop using their product. You will just stop doing business with them. The consumer will ultimately dictate their success. And then there's just some middle ground, like the equivalent in the Seinfeld episode of the Soup Nazi, when you hate the guy that owns the business, but his product's so good, you just use him. And I think what makes pro sports so much different than every other industry, right? If you hate the shoes that Nike makes, you will not buy Nikes. If you hate the burgers that your local burger joint down the street from your house makes, you will not go to lunch there anymore. You'll just go eat somewhere else. But if you're born in San Francisco, in Dallas, Texas, in Philadelphia, you're just kind of, for the most part, now some people are different, but kind of born into your sports fandom. And you're, I would say, the overwhelming percentage of humans that consume NFL football. I'm just going to guesstimate 85% of the teams people root for are based on where they grew up. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel pretty strongly I'm right. Give or take, there are sometimes, maybe if you were born in the 90s in Florida, you just love the Packers, right? Because they were really good with Brett Favre. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but for the most part, if you're born in Miami, you're going to root for the Miami Dolphins. If you're born in Dallas, Texas, you're going to like the Cowboys. If you're born in New York, you're going to like the Giants or the Jets. And you have zero power over what happens with that team. Yet, as we talked about earlier this week, you are making them money even if you don't buy a jersey, attend a game. If you just consume the product, you are making and leading to the league, getting billions of dollars through the media deals. And historically, and this speaks for all the team sports, especially the big teams, when your team sucks, the number one thing you say beside fire the coach, cut the quarterback, whatever, we need this guy to sell the team. I saw it forever with the Raiders, who struggled to make money in the Bay Area, which for the last decade, went on one of the greatest economic runs in the history of the world. And Jed York profited greatly. Now, he won a little bit early in the decade with Harbaugh, parlayed that into a stadium, parlayed that into hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue, and now profit. And Mark Davis and the Raiders couldn't quite figure that out. And obviously, in the last 20 years, they've had one winning season. And one thing I know a lot of Raider fans, personally, they'll often say, I wish Mark Davis would sell the team. I would love for Mark Davis to sell the team. And if the Raiders were to put up for, if they would just sell the team, now with Vegas, with basically a free stadium, if it went up for auction, they would get $4 billion. It would be stupid. And same with the Redskins. For a long period of time, people are like, I just want Daniel Snyder to sell the team. And it's one of those things, if you just go on social media, it's he shouldn't be allowed to own the team. And it's that's a cute little thing on Facebook or Twitter. But the reality is, he paid for it. It's his. That's the way ownership in this country works. And unless you do something insane, they can't take your team away from you. Once you buy it, it's yours. Once you're the majority shareholder. One thing was clear late in the season and definitely early in the offseason is people attempted a hostile takeover, i.e. the minority stakeholders in the Washington football team. And honestly, I didn't even know minority owners existed until I worked for the Eagles. And I remember my first year there, we're getting ready for the draft, and I was actually going to go to Radio City Music Hall. I did. I went to Radio City Music Hall. I was the guy when they called in the draft picks. I wrote it down. You know, Cam Newton, J.J. Watt. Obviously, we didn't pick those guys. I think we picked Danny Watkins. You know, Von Miller, that whole draft. And you just write the name, and you hand it to the dude who runs it up to the league, and then Roger Goodell reads it. But I remember getting ready for the draft, helping some of the other younger guys set up the tables. And it was like, you know, Howie here, Andy Reid here, Jeffrey Lurie here, our college director here, this guy here. And then these four seats for, you know, I think one guy's name was like Mickelson. There was like three or four guys. I'm like, I've never even heard of these guys. I'm like, oh yeah, they owe a small percentage in the team. And when you own a small percentage of the team, you basically just get a suite, right? Or tickets or whatever, and get to say you're an owner of the team. You get zero voting power in hirings and firings. You have no say. Now, you profit. I don't know exactly how every NFL team works, but with the valuations of the team going up, with how much money most of these teams, you know, get every year, I'm sure your dividend and how much you make, it's probably a great paycheck. Maybe you get a quarterly statement. I don't know exactly how the payment process works. I just know it's very lucrative. But from in terms of the power, part of owning a business, it's twofold, right? It's one, I get to make money, ideally, when it does well. And two, I get to run the fucking business. Who to hire, who to fire, what to do, what visions I have on this, that, and the other. You get none of that as the minority owner. And I think clearly with the Washington football team, people were tired of Daniel Snyder having all the juice. So they attempted to leak these stories and do all this stuff over the last 6 months that then Dan Snyder eventually kind of red flagged and claimed that these people were trying to tarnish his reputation. And for a little while, it's like, God, things are getting really weird. Well, here's what we finally have a result and a final, you know, conclusion to this whole deal. The minority owners lost. They failed. Because the headline I saw 24 hours ago is Dan Snyder buys out minority owners, is now the sole owner of the team. You know what that means? It's like, you know, sometimes in the movies when there's a hostile takeover and there's like a militia trying to overthrow the government. It's like, God, if they overthrow it, the president, the acting dictator, whatever's fucked. Well, you know what happens when that militia doesn't, you know, jump the fence and the actual army wipes them out? They lose. Now, this, they get paid for their services. I read Dan Snyder is paying over $850 million to make these minority owners go away. I don't know exactly how many they had, but it was clear. They were trying to overthrow them. Maybe the league was a part of it. Maybe the league had a grand idea of eventually getting Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, involved, make him an owner of this team. It wildly failed. Because now Dan Snyder doesn't still just not only own the Redskins, or excuse me, the Washington football team, there are no minority owners. He is the grand poobah. He is the dictator of the franchise, which he essentially was even as the majority owner that didn't own 100%, but now he owns 100% of the thing. And I think the league would have loved to get rid of him because it has been a disaster really for two decades, having a flagship franchise in one of the biggest markets in the biggest division, the NFC East, and then being bad. But now they're good. They just won the division. Now, granted, they won a division where they were under 500, but with Ron Rivera, you think they have some capable people running the franchise. They hire Martin Mayhew from the 49ers, who, you know, when he was the GM of the Lions, they did make the playoffs. But it does feel like the Washington football team is heading in the right direction, but there's no way around it. Is whether the league was involved or not, whether these minority owners were just tired of dealing with Dan Snyder, it was an epic failure. Now, they're going to be paid for their failure. They don't have a choice. That's the way business works. You have contracts. You own a percentage. If you want me to go away, you got to pay me to go away. But that's exactly what Dan Snyder did. And I just don't see how there's any way that Dan Snyder doesn't own this team for the foreseeable future. because it's like the movie, man. When those rebels turn the corner and they're telling each other in the jungle, like, we're going to take these guys down. And then they turn the corner and there are just like 8 sweet weapons pointed at them and they just get rocked. That's what Dan Snyder just pulled off. And now, for as much shit, and everyone's been saying for him to sell the team forever, I don't think it could be more the opposite right now because he's in full control.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Okay, let's talk about an issue that actually parallels society. And I saw this story this week, within the last couple days, is that the NFL Players Association want no part of off-season activities anymore. They don't want to go to work in the off-season. Like forever, you would show up really right around now and have several phases of an off-season, from working out to then getting on the field and running to then practicing. And last year, none of that happened. What did they do? They went virtual. And it was like pretty good, pretty easy. Well, Corona is, you know, with the vaccine coming to a screeching halt, the Americas is opening wide open. You know, California, for whatever reason, we're still thinking it's the middle of 2020, but we'll get there sooner than later. Many of your states, if you're listening, wide open, rocking and rolling. And the teams, mainly the players and the general managers, are ready to get back to work. They want the off-season activities to happen. The players want no part of it. I think if you just, many of you listening, if you've been able to work from home for the last year, I'm sure many of you are like, I don't want to go back to work. I've been able to do everything I can from my house. I can work perfectly from my home office. And you're probably right. But the reality is, unless you run the company, you're not going to be in charge of that. Right? Forever, when I worked in football, then when I worked in radio, I had to go into the office. I understood it in football. I struggled in radio. Like, what? I was spending so much time commuting, I had to take a train in. And just like 5 years later now, I can't imagine going every day into a studio when I can do all of my work from home. But I had to go work for myself to pull that off. If I work for a radio station, I have buddies that do in various markets. Someone, I was on a text thread the other day that said, you know, we just got an email from our bosses, like, time to start getting ready. We're going to start transitioning back into the office. And some of you guys getting those emails, it kind of sucks. Because I think part of it is you realize, and that's why I'd recommend, like, being an entrepreneur is fun. It's hard. Like, you got to go back. Sometimes you got to start in the gutter, start at zero. But eventually, once you get off of rocking and rolling, if you want to go into the office, it's going to be your office. You're not doing it for someone else. But that's not the way most of us work. Most of us answer to somebody. Now, the difference in this situation, once a union gets involved, you see it with the teachers' union. I would say it was one of the more polarizing issues of the last year. When can we get back into schools? Now, it's not really a polarizing issue anymore in March. I wouldn't call it a bipartisan issue or a partisan issue. I'd say it's pretty universal. Whether you're a Democrat, whether you're a Republican, like, I want the fucking kids to go back to school. But the teachers' unions want no part of it. At least, I'm just speaking for California. Some of your states might be different. Our teachers' unions out here want no part of going back 5 days a week. And knowing people, I have good friends whose sisters, you know, are teachers, and they say, listen, I'm ready to go back. A lot of people just don't want to go back to work. It's easier to work from home. Guess what? They haven't stopped getting paid. If you cut off their payment, they'd go back to work, right? Actual tangible, go back to the classroom. That's a major polarizing issue right now in America. Because the unions have some juice. You have to negotiate. You can't, if I just ran a deli and I'm like, hey man, deli's open, you know, we're starting to make sandwiches tomorrow at 10. You're either showing up or you're not. You don't have union representation. Well, like the teachers, the players have union representation. And they're going, yeah, we're not really feeling this offseason. But here's the reality. Who do you think is leading this union charge? Well, we know because he's got on record before, Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers doesn't want offseason. And you know what? In fairness to Aaron Rodgers, he doesn't need a fucking offseason. He's one of the best players in the history of the league. He went on record last year and said, you know one thing, not having offseason, my elbow and my arm felt a lot fresher. You could see it. MVP of the league. Looked awesome. Best season he's had in years. Trent Williams, who also an outlier, 8-time Pro Bowler, literally took 2019 off. He did not play. He came back, no offseason, made a Pro Bowl, and got a $100-plus million contract. Again, Trent Williams, outlier. You know who's not an outlier? The majority of the league, who are 5th, 6th, 7th round, and undrafted free agents. You know where they benefit from? Offseason activities. Why? Because once training camp starts, you know what I'm focused on? Week one. Implementing my scheme to my starters and just honing it in and getting ready for games. I don't have unlimited time to give reps. And if I do, I'm going to lean to guys I've paid money or high round picks. But when I have off season, right, the workouts, the meetings, and even just the practices while they're in shorts and t-shirts, you can stand out and you can make an impression. Like anything in life, everything you do in a business sense and in football, whenever you're around a coach, you are making an impression on your employer, on your boss. Whatever you do, right? You're going to lunch with your boss. Even if you're just shooting the shit, he is judging you. So you always got to think about everything you do involved with someone like non your parents, your brother, your like close friends, anything in a business umbrella, you can make an impression positively or negatively on those people. And if you don't have a lot of equity built up, every impression is important. And one thing late round picks and undrafted free agents have to do is make an impression in the offseason. Now, here's the kicker. These negotiations are between the union and the owner. Here's what I know the owners do not care about: offseason activities. Why? They don't make any money off it. So do I think they would be open-minded to make it virtual? 100%. But I do think the coaches and the GMs are probably telling them, we really want this. Because it's when they're able to develop people that do not make much money, late round picks, just people that are not going to be able to get that many reps if it didn't exist in training camp. It's when they can kind of stand out. Maybe a guy can go from a third teamer to a second teamer. Then all of a sudden training camp happens and your starting right guard pulls a hamstring. And you're like, you know what? Let's give Billy Johnson, our 7th round pick, the opportunity to start at right guard for these next week in training camp, where you would never have that thought process if off-season activities did not exist. So I get the people having the most juice in the union. Like, I don't pretend to know how the teachers' union works. I just do know at this point in time, like, it's time to get back into the classroom, right? This one, a little more complicated. A large percentage, I would imagine, of the older players, guys under contract, veteran guys, want no part of OTAs. They don't need it. The other thing is, they directly benefit. Because if I'm a 7th-year offensive lineman who makes $6 million, that is less time for someone to steal my job. That is less time for a rookie to make a sweet impression. And I'm not even talking about like a first-round rookie. I'm talking about a 7th-round rookie. Because you know what happens is that 7th-round rookie, if my coach goes after offseason, goes, maybe there's a chance that our 7th-rounder is as good as our starter. Well, if we cut our starter, we'd save $7 million on the salary cap. We would get out of his salary. Maybe we could trade that guy and improve the team. That's what they're thinking. And that's what the veteran guys know. You know who has no say in the union? Younger players. Definitely the rookies. They'll have no pull. So I think we got to be careful of, and listen, I never played in the NFL. Hell, I didn't make it past high school football. But I've been around OTAs now for a decade. And when I worked in the league, I saw when I first got there, the old CBA existed. And then my 2nd year, the lockout happened and the way OTAs are now. Here's what I do know. Practices are pretty easy. You're on the field. Now, granted, I've only seen, I guess, Andy Reid, Del Rio. I've seen Harbaugh. I've seen Kyle Shanahan. I've been to enough OTAs to know from an NFL standpoint, there are no pads. It's basically a cardiovascular workout. You come there, you get breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Maybe not dinner because you're out of there. But you're working 6-7 hour days. Now, I can't speak to what Belichick and maybe some other coaches are doing. You get a lot of 3-day weekends. You get bonuses for showing up. You got to work out anyway. It's not like you would just be on vacation at the beach the entire time. You would be working out with a personal trainer. Now, I do understand if you live in Florida, you live in Texas, and you play for Seattle, you play for Philly, you're like, I don't want to fucking fly back there. Right, I don't want to do it. I do get it. Like I understand both sides, but I just know from a coaching GM side, I want some off-season activities. Even if we got to meet in the middle, maybe we won't do as many as we previously had, but we're doing half. Like, because it does not benefit our football team to do nothing. Now, it benefits the great players. They don't need the work. Now, you could argue, besides like Rodgers to keep his arm fresh, iron sharpens iron. The more you're locked in at the highest level of any profession and you're able to stay sharp, it only improves your skills. But for a lot of guys, because the nature of the contract structure, you're kind of always fighting for your survival. So you don't want to be in positions where you get more reps, more tape to not look as good. It's a survival mechanism. So is the union, when you read the headline, oh, they just don't want to do it, or do they not want to do it? Like Aaron Rodgers just strictly doesn't want to do it to stay fresh. His is strictly for his own personal reason. I'd imagine a lot of older veterans don't want to do it because, one, they don't want to risk getting overtaken. They don't want to risk this being the year that they slip and giving their coach more of a reason to check out other guys. So I think we're at a slippery slope, and they did the right thing last year by canceling it. But now it feels a little teacher union, you know, in early March. Like, are we really pushing this a little bit? They're not asking for that much. You're not doing double days in June. They're no pads. They're feeding you. They're giving you bonuses. It ain't that fucking difficult. So I don't know exactly the resolution that's going to come out, but I will be stunned, absolutely floored, if they don't meet in the middle somehow and OTAs. I don't know exactly about this year. I could see this year being another virtual, but big picture, the league is going to want, because that's where they develop their younger talent. That's where they develop their later round draft picks. Check Google the league. The majority of the league is not top 10 picks. It's mid to late round picks and undrafted free agents. Well, it's hard to just make your hay in just training camp. There aren't unlimited amount of reps. You need the off season. So maybe they meet in the middle to do like a young rookie camp. I know they've always had like rookie mini camp, but maybe it's back-to-back weeks of rookie mini camp. Maybe there's only one veteran mini camp. I don't exactly know, but I will be, like I said, I will be stunned if the next decade OTAs just disappear. I can't see it happening. Okay, one thing that happened really just this year that I didn't see coming is the quarterback market. I don't even pretend to quite understand it. Now, there are two major players that were potentially going to move teams. Deshaun Watson has his legal troubles right now. Nothing can happen until that's figured out. Your fucking guess is as good as mine. I got no clue. Zero clue. I don't know the guy. I've only heard incredible things about his character. So I just got to let it play out, which, you know, if he's innocent, that sucks. If he's guilty, it's beyond sad, and his career would be over. So I don't really know what else to say there. The Russell Wilson situation, like, he listed the four teams. Well, he ain't going to Dallas. The Bears have nothing to give him. Saints have no money, and now they're rolling back Jameis. And unless Gruden wants him, which I'm sure he does, but unless they do a trade, I don't know, is anything going to happen with Russell? Who knows? Maybe he'll expand his list. And Sam Darnold has not been traded. Maybe they just roll back with Sam Darnold. But to me, the backup quarterback market and just the fringe bridge starter was a little confusing, to be honest with you. Because player contracts are like housing comps, right? You can't sell your house in a neighborhood for $1 million if it is the same specs as every other house in the market that has gone for $700,000. That's not the way it works. Now, maybe if someone's desperate and they need a house, maybe you get $800,000. But you're not going that much different than the going rate on the block. And last year, Marcus Mariota became the highest paid backup at $7.5 million. The reason they settled on that number is because the year before, the highest paid backup was Teddy Bridgewater at $7 million. So they basically just gave him $500,000 more. But this year, like, there weren't really, the bridge quarterback market was kind of bizarre. It was really just Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was a true bridge quarterback, who had one of his better seasons ever, and we've seen he's typically not that good, but I got to give the guy credit, played really well. The Washington football team gave him $10-plus million. Pretty solid bridge quarterback money. We've seen before Glennon a couple years ago when he went to the Bears and ended up in Arizona was making like $15-18 million. That's too much for bridge quarterbacks. To me, a bridge quarterback, I want a little bit more than the top backup quarterback, but nowhere near, you know, the high-end starters that are now plummeted down the market because more people have signed, like the Carrs and the Jimmy Garoppolos. So $10 million, that number made sense. Here are the numbers I did not understand. I would rather have Marcus Mariota than Andy Dalton. The Bears gave Andy Dalton $10 million. I think that is some of the dumbest money that's ever been spent. I haven't talked to Nagy about this. He's not in charge of the contracts, but I would say that I don't know. I'd tell him that. That Andy Dalton was just making $2 million for the Cowboys. Now he makes 10. How did he increase his value fivefold in a season where he wasn't even that good? It makes no sense to me. But then Mariota, who only played in one game because on a Thursday night game, Carr got hurt, has to take a pay cut from $7.5 million while he was scheduled to make 10 down to 3. Don't quite get that one. And then Trubisky, who is very, very flawed, but if he's going to be a backup quarterback, I'd have no problem paying Trubisky $5, $6, $7 million. Somehow the Bills got him for $2.5 million. I'd argue that was the best deal of the offseason. Again, not a Mr. Trubisky guy if he's got to be my starting quarterback, but if I got Josh Allen, if I got Patrick Mahomes, if I got Russell Wilson, if I got Aaron Rodgers, and I get Mitch Trubisky for $2.5 million, I do that all day long. That's an easy deal to sign. I love that. And I don't like Mitch Trubisky, but I love him at $2.5 million as my backup. Like, that was incredible. But how could I give... Like, I get how the Bears couldn't bring Trubisky back, but the Dalton... To me, the Dalton deal is arguably the worst signing of the offseason. Like, it's just... It's embarrassingly bad. And their social media guy right now, who's tweeting out pictures of him boxing, tweeting out pictures of QB1, like, guy... Like, get a grip, bro. Like, let's slow down on the tweeting of Andy Dalton. Like, we get it. He's on your team. He's overpaid. Let's just stop tweeting about him. But even Joe Flacco. Like, Flacco last year as the backup for Sam Darnold, you saw some moments with the Jets. You're like, yeah, you know, this guy's a solid backup. Give him $2-3 million. That's what he gets to go to Philly. Now, I would not pay Flacco $10 million. And Flacco's smart. He's kind of on the Chase Daniel backup plan now. Where it's like, hey, Joe, you just be a backup the next 3 or 4 years? Because you're going to realize this when your career ends. There aren't many jobs that just pay you $4.5 million. Like, you usually have to start a business to make that much money, right? You're never going to make that much money again. But if you could be a backup quarterback for the next 2 or 3 years, you could rack up another $12, $13, $14 million. Props to Joe Flacco. He's figured that one out. But the quarterback market right now, and it's why I don't mind the Flacco contract with Philly. Like, I would assign Flacco as a backup quarterback for $3 million. Just like I would sign Trubisky for a backup quarterback between $2 and $3 million all day long. Fitzpatrick, to me, he's a little risky because he's coming off a great year, so his value's kind of high. If his year had just been average, he's probably making $3 or $4 million. So you're basically paying a premium for a guy who's just coming off one of his best seasons of his career who is kind of old. Now, you can say the way the league's changing, spread out, maybe he's better off in this modern day times than he was a decade ago. And that might be true. But, you know, he's 36. But other than that, like, sometimes these contracts, I mean, Adoree Jackson, the contract that he signed this week for the Giants, like, I was on Colin's podcast. One thing I learned in the NFL and just watching it really closely is that you can't be a good corner if you have no instincts. It's impossible because it doesn't matter if you can really run. You have to be able to have just like these natural instincts to know when the ball's there, to know when to shoot up your hands, to have a feel for the routes that are coming, to have a feel for how to position your body. If you do not have instincts, it's impossible to be a good corner. It's just, it doesn't work. How many corners in the history of the league have been productive that have bad instincts? They don't exist. So I didn't understand that contract at all. It makes no sense. Like, I do understand some other NFL stories, like Clowney. He went to meet the Browns this week, and they had him on a visit. Here's the problem for Clowney. Is physically, for a large period of his career, he was viewed as an elite physical specimen. And he still technically is that guy. But last year, he misses a bunch of games, he's injured, and now he's not productive anymore. Like, at least when he was an 8-9 sack guy, a little like Sue years ago, you're like, well, the potential's there. Well, once you get to be 28, 29, and injured a lot, you're no longer potential. You know what you are? You're that. You're just a guy that's not really that productive. Now, you can play in the NFL, but I would imagine the Browns are like, yeah, Clowney, we'll give you $1 million, $2 million. How do you get a guy to play for that when he's been used to making number one overall pick? Then he makes $15 million or whatever on his fifth-year option. Last year, gets $13 million to go to Tennessee. It's probably pretty jarring. Like, I like Richard Sherman a lot, personally. I think he's a really high-level guy. He's one of my favorite corners to ever watch. But he's coming off a season where he missed a bunch of games. He's never been fast, but he's definitely lost a step. He's his own agent. I bet it's probably pretty difficult for him to hear some of these teams offering him contracts. Like, Richard, we love to have you. We'll give you the veteran minimum. We'll guarantee you $100,000. Money's all relative. When you're used to making $10 million, can you imagine if someone looks at you and goes, yeah, you're worth $1 million? Even if that is truly what you're worth, like that's a hard pill to swallow. If you were making right now, if you're listening to this and you're making $100,000 and you're like, you know, I'm not quite as good at my job as I was 5 years ago. And then someone comes and like, you know what? I'm going to offer you $35,000. I mean, that would jolt you. And a lot of these guys are becoming their own agents. Well, part of being your own agent is getting on the phone with the general fucking manager. I don't know why I'm swearing so much to this podcast. I'm kind of fired up. Or the head coach and them being like, you know, we don't really see it. That is one benefit of having an agent as an athlete is sometimes the GM and the coach get to talk a little smack and they get to tell you like what the flaws are. And then the agent filters it back to the player. Well, if you're your own agent, like you got to get on the phone with the contract negotiator, who's typically the GM who knows the scouting report on the player. And I bet Clowney has an agent, but like I bet Clowney's like, yeah, you're just not that good, man. Like we don't think you're worth that much. Some other things, Tevin Coleman signs with the Jets. I used to really like him with the Falcons, but then when he came to the Niners, he got banged up a lot. I just don't think he's just one of those running backs, got a lot of wear and tear, gets injured a lot. T.Y. Hilton back with the Colts. I know there were reports. This is my favorite report during training camp, or not during training camp, but during free agency, is like, you know, he turned down a lot of money to come home. Like, no, did he? Did he really? Or was this his best contract offer? Or were the contract offers equal and he just chose to stay where he was comfortable? Like, you know, most people aren't turning down a lot of money. Now, did he turn down, like, the Colts gave him $10 million and someone offered him $11 million? Yeah, maybe. Okay, he turned down some money. But, like, was someone offering him, yeah, you know, we'll give you a two-year contract, guarantee you $20 million. You're like, yeah, he returned to the Colts for $8 million guaranteed. Like, yeah, that did not happen. There's a lot of that going on right now. You know, Adoree Jackson, he turned down money other places. No, he didn't. That was the biggest offer he got. And that's something that gets leaked because you want to look good as an agent. And you want to look like a good guy as a player, too. Like, you know, I came back. Well, T.Y., if someone would have offered you big money, you would have been gone. That's the reason you signed way after free agent started. And I like T.Y. Hilton. C.J. Beathard signed with the Jags. Kittle got mad at me once. I had him on my other podcast, and he had blocked me. And I said, George, you know, I'm a fan of you. Like, I'm pro George Kittle. I don't tweet negative things about you. I don't understand why you blocked me. And he's like, well, there are two reasons why I would have blocked you. He's like, you either said something about my family. I'm like, well, I didn't do that. Or he's like, you probably talked some shit about C.J. Beathard. And I'm like, yeah, I'm probably guilty there. Because C.J. was his teammate at Iowa and is like one of his best friends. And listen, I think C.J. is a good guy. He's just not a very good football player. You know, relative to like, he cannot play in an NFL game. He's one of those guys, like, he can be a backup for a while, but the moment he has to play, you're in real trouble. Like, that's a swing and a miss for Kyle Shanahan. They draft him in the third round. At the end of the day, C.J. Beathard's probably like a seventh round pick. Ndamukong Suh back to Tampa. They've basically got the band back together. They've kept their entire team. They, to me, heavy favorites feels a little strong because it was hard for them to win the NFC, but they're going to be pretty good. I mean, Tom's going to be more comfortable. They got all the guys on offense coming back. Their defense is going to be loaded. Their coaching staff is all coming back. It's not like they got new coordinators. I think they're the clear favorites with probably the Rams and the Packers in the mix in the NFC. Pats re-signed James White. To me, the number one question for the Patriots is like, who's taking the majority of their quarterback snaps? Is it Cam? Do they end up somehow getting Jimmy Garoppolo? Do they trade up in the draft and get a Trey Lance, a Mac Jones, a Justin Fields? To me, until you tell me after the draft what their quarterback room looks like, I think they're going to be competitive. I think they're already in the mix for the seventh seed, but I got to know more to feel really, really comfortable about that. Okay, let's do a little Middlecoff mailbag. At John Middlecoff is the Instagram handle. Direct messages, wide open. So you slide up into those DMs, and I answer them here on the pod. Here's a question for the pod. as we get closer to the draft and all the speculation around the Niners, maybe looking at Matt Ryan and drafting a project in the NFL, is there no player buyout options like in the NBA where teams and players agree on a number to part ways?
I think it happens a lot when guys get cut, right? It's kind of, in an indirect way, what the Raiders were doing to Mariota. It's like, take a pay cut or we're going to cut you. Now, ultimately, he took a pay cut, but that's the equivalent. The thing with Matt Ryan that I was told is after June 1st, his contract for them is much easier to trade. So if they were to draft, let's say, I think the Falcons pick fourth. If they take, you know, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, I doubt they would take Mac Jones, who feels basically like just this for Matt Ryan, but probably not as good. They could trade Matt Ryan after the draft and designate it a June 1st trade. I think that's probably unlikely, but who knows? Do you think your boy Nagy would get Kellen Mond? I think he would be absolutely killer in that offense, slightly more athletic than Alex Smith, and Nagy did wonders with Alex. Completely honest, whenever I watch Kellen Mond, and I never watched Texas A&M thinking he was an NFL player, I just watched them like a college team, just kind of paid attention. He never popped like I thought he was going to be some big NFL prospect. None of my friends in the league ever bring him up. I do think it's a little fabricated media hype guy. Like, I think he's probably a third-day pick. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I need to do some more research on this guy, but I watch a lot of college football, and I got a pretty good eye for who's an NFL player and who's not, and it never really hit me like, oh, yeah, this guy's a big-time prospect. And I think I saw someone act like he was could get drafted pretty high. Am I the only one who thinks the Rams are getting overhyped a little heading into this year? Yes, they upgraded a quarterback, but at the expense of losing two key pieces in the secondary, Hill and Johnson, and significant D-line depth. Not to mention losing Brandon Staley. True, but that's out of their control. Feels like folks who are already anointing them as the clear number two in the NFC have not examined the entire roster. I somewhat agree that the depth of their team, and last year Brandon Staley, with Hill and Johnson specifically, did a really good job with the non-Jalen Ramsey DBs. Their DBs played really well. Their linebackers played well. But, and Brandon Staley was only there a year, but he did a good job. Their quarterback is dramatically more talented than Jared Goff. Like, it wouldn't shock me if Matt Stafford, if he can stay healthy 17 games, could throw 40 touchdowns. They got Kupp. They got Woods. They got Akers. They just got an excellent offensive play caller. Now, they don't have picks, right, because they traded him for Ramsey. So they don't have a first-round pick, and then they won't because of Stafford either. Yeah, their depth. They're an NBA. They're like the Nets, you know, in the sense of their top end is high. Aaron Donald's pound-for-pound arguably best player in the league. Ramsey's an elite player. Stafford, really high-end player. But their depth, and that's, I think, one thing we're gonna find out this extra game. Does depth really come into play, or does it just feel like a normal season where guys get hurt, but like they normally do? But I'm with you. I mean, their team, probably top to bottom, is just not going to be good enough. But like, they couldn't beat the Jets because Jared Goff was skipping balls. Are those days over because you got Matt Stafford? Just saw an article on Yahoo about Deshaun Watson is facing 16 lawsuits for sexual assault. Why isn't anyone talking about this? I think everyone's talking about it. But I don't... I think a lot of people, like, what are you going to say? If he's sexually assaulting 16 women, he's a criminal, scumbag, loser. If these people are making it up, character assassination, they deserve to go to jail. Like, I think it's pretty black and white. I would imagine most normal people, not on social media, would be like, yeah, if you sexually assault a woman, you're a fucking loser. Now, if someone makes that up about you, and I've seen it with Reuben Foster, that person deserves to go to jail. But I don't know. I don't know any of these people. I'd always heard great things about Deshaun Watson. And then this comes out, like a lot of people, I'm kind of like, God, what am I even supposed to think? I think the answer is, like, I don't even think we really know what to think. No one knows.
I don't really know what there is to say. Beside, you know, I don't think you can trade for him until some of this stuff is figured out. Until we get a resolution, a tangible, like, he did this or he did not do this. It's kind of a weird spot. I mean, not a weird spot. Just, I mean, if it happened, it's a terrible spot. If it didn't happen, it's terrible too. Huge fan. Have you gotten any offers for your own television show? I love the insight you provide each week. Keep up the great work. No, I have not. I also think TV's a little antiquated. You know, it's like me and Guy started a YouTube channel. Pays pretty well. You just put up content. I got my own YouTube channel, John Middlecoff. I'm going to keep pumping a lot of content. I'm going to start doing some golf content. I got some ideas for 2021. I like doing my own thing. So I haven't. I'm not saying like I'm turning television shows down, but I do think the game's changed. You know, the amount of people, way more people watch YouTube than watch television. That's a fact now. You know, I would imagine in the next decade, TV is going to look dramatically different than it once was. Like, I would have said 5 years ago, like, I introduce myself now, like, what do you do for a living? I'm a podcaster. I think people look at me like, wait, that's how do you make a living? Like, how do you survive? I'm like, actually, I do pretty well. Right? Well, 5 years ago, it's like, well, you got to get back in radio. You got to get back in radio. I want no part of radio. I love the podcast space. This is my home. You guys are my people. Like, in another decade, I don't even think, honestly, my take on radio, like, I don't even think it'll exist. Obviously, television isn't going away. But the way we consume, like the way people consume, Colin talks about this, like his Facebook and YouTube channel do huge numbers. And any segment that he can post on YouTube, I would imagine more people consume it on YouTube than do just on Fox Sports 1, which is cool. Which if you're, you know, in my space as a content creator, got a lot of options. Reading about all these NBA trades, does anyone even care? Who has ever heard of these guys being traded? Great question. Well, I think part of it today is like random guys were traded, none of the famous guys. But I didn't really pay attention. Once I saw that the Warriors, you know, we had a little, we had an incident this week in the Bay Area with a reporter / blogger. He's really an aggregator, and Steve Kerr kind of getting mad at him for aggregating something about Kevin Durant. The NBA, I was thinking about this. Basically, Steve Kerr said on a podcast that he enjoyed last season where the Warriors were the worst team in the league. They ended up getting the number two pick, and when we went to the bubble, the Warriors didn't even have to go to the bubble. That's how terrible they were. And Kerr said, in not so many words, that year was much more fun than the last year of Kevin Durant. Now, he didn't use Kevin Durant, but the guy that blogged it used Kevin Durant. And Steve Kerr called him out by name in a press conference. Like, the NBA people are so obsessed with Twitter. I thought about this today when I saw Woj breaking news on Twitter for the NBA trades. I don't understand why these companies keep allowing these guys to break news on Twitter. The only guy getting rich on this is Jack, the guy that owns Twitter. The league makes no money off it. The networks make no money off it. Even Woj, it's not like Twitter pays them. Like, I get it feels big, but it's like they're actually 80% of adults are not on Twitter. Facebook is infinitely bigger than Twitter. YouTube's worst day is Twitter's best day. But the NBA lives in this kind of Twitter vacuum. It's kind of a bizarre little place. If Devontae Smith fell to 17, you're Gruden and Mayock, how do you not pick him? Well, he's not going to be there. And you can't pick a receiver. I mean, you just drafted Ruggs last year. You drafted Bryan Edwards. You got Waller. You got Jacobs. You signed Kenyon Drake. You have to draft. They need a linebacker. I've been around the Raiders now for pretty closely since about 2013. Their linebacking play over that period of time, I don't pretend to know every team's for the last 7 years, their linebacking play, but I can feel pretty strongly about saying there might have been a team as bad. There has not been a team worse. The Raiders linebacking play the last 7-8 years has been just atrocious. I mean, they've been slow. They've been unathletic. They need a linebacker. And I'm going to steal this from Mike Lombardi, but I think he's right. When your linebackers are slow, your defense is slow. And when your linebacker's fast, your defense is fast. Like the Niners defense had a bunch of injuries last year. Fred Warner made every play. Even some years with Kuechly and the Panthers. Some of those years, like, guys are injured. Kuechly makes every tackle. So it's like, God, they feel fast. Well, it's really just one guy. I mean, just kicking ass and taking names. Seattle, their defensive line hasn't been that good. Hell, their DBs haven't been that good. They got Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright killing everybody. So you're like, God, Seattle's defense, you know, flying around making tackles. Well, it's really just two guys. So, yeah, they need linebackers. No wide receivers. Do you think Drew Brees is too much of a union guy to succeed as a potential Sunday night football broadcaster? He obviously has been outspoken about CBA topics, player rights, and accepted market value at quarterback position for the sake of the players overall. While I doubt he has the intellect and drive to nail down broadcast, while I don't doubt he has the intellect and drive to nail down the broadcast mechanics, my fear is that his inability to see anything NFL-related through a different lens other than players will lead to a biased undertones on national television. Moreover, it could lead to Sunday Night Football broadcasts becoming entertainment through a talk radio style, aka Booger and Monday Night Football, instead of entertaining through the football game. I think you might be onto something. My issue is not necessarily like through a player's lens, because I think you could have players' lens topics, right? I mean, John Gruden always gave the coach the benefit of the doubt. I don't think that's crazy. My issue with Drew is he willing to just kind of throw some curveballs? Or is he just going to be, and I don't even know if this saying it's like PC is the right verbiage to use here, but just, is he going to stay in the slow lane? You know what made Madden and Gruden kind of awesome? And any good broadcaster, like in baseball, you know, sometimes they go to the fast lane. And sometimes there's a car crash. But that's part of it. When you talk for a living, sometimes you're going to say some things that are wrong. But we're in the entertainment business. Drew Brees, can you entertain? Like, that's what I know about Philip Rivers, why I think Philip Rivers would have been elite. His energy, his passion, he's going to say some crazy things. I like crazy. Do you know what the people like crazy? The consumer. I don't know if Drew Brees' brand is very wholesome, very by the book. Will he give some zingers? That's why I think Peyton Manning has always turned it down. I've known a couple people that have known Peyton Manning, and just all you got to do is like watch him on TV, Saturday Night Live. He is not Mr. PC. You know, he's fun, he swears, he's got a lot of shit to him. And I'm not saying Drew Brees doesn't, but he kind of can let it out. But I think he was afraid on Monday Night Football, you know, of just kind of showing both sides to the public, right? Even though I think he would have had it in the bag. Will Drew Brees do that? Now, Tirico is pretty damn good, and he's worked with Gruden, so maybe he can get it out of him. But yeah, I think that's the biggest question. Because I think his likability. One thing that Tony Romo really has that I'm going to be interested to see if Drew Brees has, like, Tony feels like just a guy. Like, I just like, yeah, I could drink some beers with Tony Romo. Like, yeah, I could go play golf and hang out with Tony Romo. And that's hard to do, you know, when you're a super famous, super rich guy. Drew Brees has made hundreds of millions of dollars. Can he come off as relatable, right? Can he get in the booth? Most football fans, I mean, you're talking middle class America. That's who is watching these games. Can he relate to that guy? Now, ultimately, we're coming to the game for the game. Like, we watch a lot of games with bad broadcasters, and it doesn't matter. One of the big news stories of the day was, like, Jim Nantz re-signed. I'm like, yeah, I think it matters for golf. No one in the NFL would have noticed if Jim Nantz disappeared. I know he's famous, and he's been doing it forever. If they put Ian Eagle or put someone else, by week two, no one's even thinking about it. The media would talk about it. That's it. But big personalities as analysts, like, we've missed John Gruden ever since he left. It's been like it's screwed over two things, right? It's been awful for the Raiders. He's been crazy. And it's been bad for Monday Night Football. Like, he was a big loss. Because he was just a big personality. Hate him or love him, like, he just entertained. It's hard to entertain. I mean, trust me, I talk for a living. It's hard. You got to have a lot of energy. You got to kind of say some crazy things. Sometimes you got to believe some crazy things. I'm kind of nuts. I'm not saying I'm Drew Brees, but like, sometimes good broadcasters are like, this guy's kind of coming out of left field here. That would be my question. I'm not trying to compare myself to Drew Brees. I'm just saying, like, part of it just being different.
According to Colin, the Packers are still planning on moving off Aaron Rodgers in the next little bit. Coward is basing this off of how the Packers traded Favre and let Rodgers play. Brett Favre retired first and then left the door open for him to get traded. Aaron Rodgers just gave a big FU to the haters and won his third MVP. Do you believe that the Packers are still planning on moving off Aaron and that's why they didn't restructure?
If I'm Aaron Rodgers and you want to restructure my contract, I want a contract extension. I just won my third MVP. I was a major part of us getting back to the NFC Championship and hosting the game. I was the best quarterback in the league last year until the NFC Championship when Tom Brady, you know, did he outplay him? Maybe not, but I want huge money. And if I'm the Packers, like, do I really want to pay him huge money? Can you do it again? The problem is Jordan Love couldn't beat out Tim Boyle. Now, Tim Boyle's not on the team anymore. So can Jordan Love take a huge step? I would say as of right now, they have no plan to get rid of him. I mean, they did last year when they drafted Jordan Love. Then they were around Jordan Love and he wasn't very good. Now, if Jordan Love this offseason, assuming the offseason happens, preseason games can look really sweet, and Aaron Rodgers comes back to earth a little bit, maybe they change their tune. But I would say right now, March 25th, recording this, Rodgers is going to be their quarterback for the next couple of years. Now, the restructure extension, like, if I'm Rodgers, okay, you want to extend me, I want $100 million guaranteed. I want a three-year contract at three-year, $120 million, $40 million a year. Guarantee every penny. And I don't think he'd be crazy for asking for that. I've got another MMQ, Monday morning question. What type of information do anonymous sources receive from NFL insiders in exchange for their breaking news? No pressure if this is outing anybody. That's a good question. Well, I've never been a GM or a coach, so I think part of it is like if I'm buddies with Schefter and I'm really close, let's say I'm Sean Payton or Belichick or Andy Reid or Howie Roseman or Jerry Jones or whoever. If I have a long-standing relationship with Schefter for a decade or two decades or whatever, it's not just I'm just saying, hey, Adam, we just gave Dak Prescott 4-year contract, $140 million or whatever. It's just me and Adam talk a lot, and he tells me what he's hearing. So he's constantly giving me information about other guys. Hey, I've heard that the going rate for this player is this. Hey, I've heard that before it ever gets out to the public, Seattle and Russell Wilson aren't in great standing, and he really likes the Cowboys or something like that, right? And then I like the guy. I know his job is breaking news. I just throw him bones. Hey, Adam, we just signed Amari Cooper, $60 million guaranteed, 5-year deal. They have good relationships. I have to say Schefter and Woj are I would consider they're friends with the GMs and coaches and the agents. So they encompass everybody involved in the deal. Now, like in any information business, you got to give a little bit to take. So I don't know exactly what the Schefters always give to the anonymous GMs, but he clearly gives them something, right? Because he's not paying. There's no money exchanged. One thing I heard way back in the day, like when Florio first started his site, and this is good business, he did a business deal with Drew Rosenhaus like 15 years ago. And paid for stories. And then obviously he just became so big, people started giving him stories for free. That's just smart business. You know, TMZ pays for stories. Now, Adam Schefter's not paying for stories. He just built a business based on relationships. Would be my educated guess. Now, like, I talked to Adam, but I've never necessarily asked him that. That's a good question, though. That is a great question. I probably need to dig in. That would be a good, like, podcast. To hear the inner workings of how anonymous sources in pro sports work. I'd listen to that. If like Schefter, some coaches, and some GMs talked. But they never would if they work in the league because they don't want to out the sources. But clearly they pump the stories to the same 3 or 4 guys. That's about all I got. So enjoy the weekend. And yeah, talk to everybody soon. Adios.